Hi, my friends. Welcome to this week's episode of Forte Catholic. I'm so glad that you are here for this special episode. We have a guest co-host today, Mr. Ryan O'Hara, who's somebody that I've admired from afar for quite some time. And then we just did a podcast crossover episode. I went on his show. He's coming here. We have a great conversation. He has been working in Catholic ministry for a long time and has a podcast where he talks to Catholic speakers about their process and about essentially preaching as a Catholic. So obviously something that I connect with. We talked about that for a while. We also test his chops by playing our freestyle preaching game, which he excels at. And then we also talk about foster care and foster parenting, because that's been a big part of his life. I hope that you enjoy this episode. If you do, please hit subscribe wherever you are watching or listening. Enjoy. Welcome into Forte Catholic. I am Taylor Schroll. I am joined today by a guest co-host, Mr. Ryan O'Hara. Hello, friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Taylor. Great to be here.
Good. I'm glad that you're here. We just finished a conversation that probably isn't released yet, but I just was a guest on your podcast called Better Preach. Tell us a little bit about the show.
Well, you know, a few years ago, through a mutual friend of ours, Edmund Mitchell.
Oh, no way. I didn't know he was a catalyst there.
He was a catalyst. He asked me, because I was kind of trying to figure out, hey, I would love to do a podcast, but like there's so many podcasts out there. How do we pick one, right? And he says, what would you love to talk about every week, you know, ongoing? And the first thing that popped in my head was preaching. And I've done some speaking and, you know, given lots of talks over the years, but just have a real love for kind of the art and science of preaching. And so kind of the idea of the show was it's called Better Preach. It's on delivering and developing great Catholic talks. But I wanted to do a behind the scenes thing, because we can watch talks, we can listen to talks, but that's all we see, just the talks. But I was like, I'm actually more interested in what happens before someone gets the mic. And, you know, what does the prayer look like? What's the routine look like? What's their preparation look like? How do they learn and how do they grow? And so, yeah, just hosting conversations with great speakers, you know, fantastic priests and deacons and just anybody who's kind of in ministry, you know, giving talks. I've learned so much. So been doing this for, you know, 18 months or more, and excited to keep going. Yeah, it's so great to have you on the show, Taylor.
Yeah, it was fun. We just wrapped up that conversation. I really enjoyed it so much that I was like, I don't want you to be a guest. I want you to be a guest co-host. Let's do this. Right?
So, thanks, man.
I want to ask you about preaching, about some of the stuff from the show, but I want to get to know you a little bit more, because both of us have kind of had a mutual respect for each other from afar, but this is really the first time that today is the first time that we're really talking at length. And it's funny, because when you invited me on the show, I had a very big sigh of relief. Anybody that listens to this show knows that my confidence in myself is absolutely wild until it is not. And so I knew who you were, and then I saw that you had the show, and it was about, you know, Better Preach, and you got, you know, 15 episodes in. I was like, I wonder if he's ever going to invite me. And you got 30 episodes in. I was like, I wonder if he's ever going to invite me. And then you got 60-something episodes in. I was like, maybe I'm not good at this. So when you invited me, it was like, I was like, oh, maybe I am good. Maybe I'm not top 15 or top 30, but I am top 65. So I was happy to receive that invitation.
Dude, that's so awesome that you'd say that. You know, most of the reason that people are on the show, either if they're like super duper kind of A-listers or whatever, and I get lucky and I have a connection to them, or it's just like, who are my friends, you know? And so as we're now just getting to know each other better, had we had, you know, this conversation today, you know, 2 years ago, you would have been top 15 for sure. Yeah. It's just all connections. Yeah. That's mostly how it goes right now. Yeah.
So speaking of connections, there's things that I know about you and then things that I don't know about you that I'm slowly learning today. And we're going to continue to learn over the course of this conversation.
Yeah.
But I knew that you did the Better Preach podcast. I think that was the first time that I really connected with you online. I started seeing, you know, like you were inviting a lot of my friends on, which, you know, I was like, oh, I probably will like him, but also it hurts my feelings a little bit. So there's a little bit of that, right? You know, like Ali Hoffman, I had just done an event with, you know, together. And anyway.
I love your honesty there.
Yeah, for sure. But so I knew you for the podcast, but then I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that. I was sitting here locally. I live in Bryan, Texas, you know, center of Texas and between all those cities that everybody's heard of. And I went to a like Catholic fundraiser, which is a pretty typical thing for me to do, right? Like I'm a Catholic person. I'm kind of connected here to the Catholic world in my local town.
Sure.
So I get invited to this this fundraiser and I'm sitting at it. I got invited by the guy who runs the organization here locally. His name's Sam Schoenfelder. And I went and I sat down. He invited me to come. I'm coming. And then, you know, it's a typical fundraiser. You have your food and your drinks and you're all kind of mingling. And then they ask you to sit down. And then typically there's a message. There might be a video. There might be, a, you know, this is who we are. And then they ask for money and then they give you more drinks. And then hopefully it opens up your pocketbooks. Like that's how these things go, right? So I'm sitting there at this event, it all seems very normal to me. You know, I've been around this dog and pony show before, having a good meal, seeing a bunch of the same people that I see at all these other Catholic events. And then the video pops on. And Ryan O'Hara is the prime person talking in this video. And I knew that you did some like work in audio video editing. The video is the best video I've ever seen at a like at a for a promotional thing for a Catholic organization. Just great promo of what SPO does, St. Paul's Outreach, where you used to work. And I didn't even know that you had worked there. And then all of a sudden, you're up on the big screen. And I was just like, oh, this guy. It's like, I knew he was good from the podcast, but this is like, I got to see like your like professional grade work. You know, like podcasts, you can record and put out in a week or so, right? Like this video, I could tell you spent some time on it. And I was like, hey, I know this guy. So I'm like literally hitting Sam Schoenfelder, who we now know is a mutual friend of the two of us. I'm like, I know him. So that was my, that's where you went from like Catholic podcaster to like, oh, this guy's like pristine at what he does. Very good.
Oh man. Thanks, dude. I don't know. I'm trying to think which video that there were a handful that we worked on, you know, and we would show different ones at dinners and stuff. But yeah, that's been my work. Really with college students for 26 years, started at the University of Missouri, just north of you a bit, University of Missouri Newman Center. I graduated from college in 96, took a job as a campus minister in 97 and for college students, and really didn't look back. I met my wife there literally like the first week I landed on campus. Oh, wow. She was a grad student and I was just grateful she wasn't a college student. That wouldn't have worked. And so that's been the work since 1997. But early 2000s, I first connected with SPO and then just always kept my eye on what St. Paul's Outreach was doing. In 2008, moved my family up to the Twin Cities here. This is where SPO's headquarters are. That's how I got to know Sam. Sam's a great friend, has been just one of my best friends for, you know, a couple decades now. And he's now in your neck of the woods, kind of trying to launch SPO college work in Texas, which is a huge undertaking. So
yeah, I like Sam a lot too, but currently his son just beat my son in the basketball championship this past week. So I'm a little mad at him, but you know, I'm sure it'll go back to, he's great, man. We've smoked some cigars, had some drinks on his back porch with some other great Catholic men. He's just a good, solid Catholic dude that I look up to. So
he is. Yeah. He's a good friend and he's a good hang. And, no, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been working in ministry for a long time, but, you know, you have this Better Preach podcast. And what I want to know is, you know, you just interviewed me about preaching for 45 minutes for your show that'll come out here, you know, sometime in the next month or two. But I want to ask you some of the things that you've picked up, both from your work in, you know, giving talks, but also in like some of the expertise that you've picked up from all these other, you know, 65 experts that you invited before me. I'm not bitter about it at all. Not at all. I don't know if you're picking up any bitterness, but I'm not bitter about it.
I mean, you were bitter, but now you're not.
No, I'm right, not. Exactly.
Yeah.
You caused there the was bitterness. You fixed it. Why would I be bitter? So we have people who listen to the show that, you know, work in youth ministry or involved in small groups at their parish, or like we have priests that listen that give homilies. We have people who maybe they're not preaching, but they're giving talks on, you know, we have experts on all sorts of different topics, whether faith-based or not faith-based. So what are some of the primary things that you are like, hey, this is required. If you're going to stand in front of people and talk, what are the things that work really well, especially in a Catholic context for you?
There's one particular episode that jumps out as kind of crystallizing something that I didn't really have words for before, but once I listened to it, it's a probably mutual friend, Paul George.
Oh, love Paul.
Yeah, Paul's great.
Paul was huge in my conversion. I've talked about him on the show before. He was very influential in my conversion. And now as an adult, I've actually worked with him together on some retreats. And that's mind-blowing to me that the guy who was like an adult and changed my life is now like a friend and coworker.
Yeah, that's right. I think I saw you guys did some men's retreats together maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Paul, yeah, probably Steubenville conferences was maybe kind of Steubenville South. Were you in that world
Yeah.
So Paul and I go back in a similar way. He was kind of somebody I had looked up to. He was working in with Life Teen we lived in Phoenix, Arizona, Mesa. I'm sorry, Tempe, but you know, St. Tim's is in Mesa and that whole thing. So he was there and we got to know each other. Well, anyway, he came on the podcast and he articulated something that I thought was just really powerful, but not something that's talked about so much. And his kind of key idea was to internalize the message. And the reason that was important was for two reasons. One, if you spend enough time with what you're going to say, it's not just practice, but it's like deeply understanding the core of your message. You're going to be able to speak about it without relying on your notes. You're going to be able to speak about it from the perspective of your own life, because it's not just internalized in that you have it memorized, but it's deeply connected to who you are. In fact, even maybe the inspiration of it in part comes through who you are and your experience of God. And for those two reasons, one, to be disconnected from your notes and being connected to the audience was the first thing. And the second thing was that it also has a personal connection to you that you can bring out in kind of a vulnerable and honest way for others. I remember, and the reason this impacted me so much was I'd always struggled with wanting to make sure that I said what I wanted to say, but I wasn't locked into my notes. And I always admired those speakers who could just seem to effortlessly communicate this powerful message without a note in sight. I'm like, how do they do that? So that was actually one of the things I just wanted to ask more and more speakers about. Like, how do you deal with notes and how do you keep your eye on the audience? Because I had a guy say something to me. It was really convicting and challenging. This guy, somebody I look up to, this is about 15 years ago. He heard me give a talk to a big audience, 200 to 300 people. And he goes, Ryan, I noticed you gave two different talks. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you gave one talk where you were looking to your notes and we really didn't have your attention and you didn't really have ours. But I heard another talk that you did have our attention and you weren't looking at your notes and you were looking at us. And so he put his finger on something I knew that I was doing. I'd be in the moment, in the spirit, looking at the people, making eye contact, speaking freely, extemporaneously with joy and with some conviction. And maybe there'd be more personal stories or something. And then I'd get locked back into my notes and and it wasn't just because I was reading the scripture or whatever. I was just basically reading my talk. And he pointed that out, that kind of I was giving two talks, man, I will never forget. That was such helpful feedback. And so I've been on a quest, really since then as Paul put it, to kind of internalize the message, be familiar enough with what I have prepared that if somehow my notes blew away, it would be okay. In fact, that sort of happened one time. Now I'm going to name drop. I don't mean this as a name drop. It just happened to be this way. Father Mike Schmitz is north of us here in Minnesota.
I've never name dropped any connection I've had with him. Not once ever. So
no, right. So it's the first time I've done it too. So I'm in Minnesota and it's so funny. Like I travel nowadays a bit more than I used to. And whenever I tell people I'm in Minnesota, what's the first thing they ask me? Do you know Father Mike Schmitz? Well, thank God I do. I actually have something to say. But anyway, he's a friend. And he invited me up to speak. He had some kind of A-lister who had to cancel on him for his Newman Center group. And he's like, hey, Ryan, could you come up and give a talk? I'm like, sure. So I got to go up there, see the whole setup for him. You know, there in Ascension presents his little spot in his living room. So Father Mike puts me in this chemistry classroom. It's got like the sink and this fixed podium way kind of close to the, the chalkboard. But the people were like 30 feet away and then further back. And I'm not going to speak behind a podium 30 feet from the front of the group. And so I was like, all right, here we go. And so I just sort of journeyed away from my notes. And I had a couple of moments where I thought, I need to go back. I got to go back. You know, can I make it? But I'm like, that would just be a weird move all the way back to the notes. And so I just kind of persevered through it. And I realized, one, I was a bit more dependent on my notes than I maybe had realized. But I also that day, particularly that day, I remember being in my hotel room and really praying into, and in Paul's words, I didn't yet have those words, but I was trying to internalize the message. And that work paid off, and I was able to kind of make it through. And I remember going back to look at my notes, and I was like, yeah, I was pretty much on target for where I had planned to go, and I literally didn't look at them again. But so thanks to Father Mike, who's brilliant at this himself, you know, I had that moment to be able to, persevere through that. And really since then, I have just determined to, you know, I think it's better to say something, let's say, poorly with eye contact than perfectly without.
Absolutely.
That's probably one of the things that I've really cemented as I've talked to all of these different folks. Many, many other things too, but that's one thing that really sticks out.
It's funny hearing that from like one from you, but then also from Paul, who I have a relationship with, where like I have seen that. I have seen myself grow in that over the years of doing this, right? Where like mm-hmm. at the beginning, I'm locked into my notes. I'm staring at the notes because it's so awkward to look out at people and see them both half paying attention to you, not paying attention to you, picking their nose. Like, you know, there's all this kind of stuff going on. But I think I was so worried about saying the wrong thing, which I think a lot of people who are like new in sharing about their faith are so worried about saying the wrong thing when like, you know, this stuff, right? So we're to where I'm like, even if I'm like speaking with teens, right? They think they don't know stuff. And I'm like, no, like I'm going to stand here and make you answer the question because I know that you know it. And there's just this, both in answering and asking questions, people are just so worried about saying the wrong thing. I'm like, gosh, it's going to be fine. We're all going to be okay, right? And I think I was so much staring at my notes that I wasn't connecting with people. And I forget when it happened, but I know that it did happen. Because I think it was the first time that I ever got complimented on like, oh, like you made eye contact with me during the talk. Mm-hmm. And that was like fresh for people because people are used to not getting that a lot in the Catholic context, right? Because a lot of times in like our CCE classes, it's like it's volunteers and they are reading from a book because now I know it as adult. Life is busy and you're volunteering. You looked at the book for the first time 3 minutes before you got there. You know, like, so you teach it for the book. And I totally understand that, right? But for people who are, you know, priests giving homilies or speakers that are giving talks or youth ministers or even like small group leaders, you know, just volunteers of the parish or whatever. It's like, if you have internalized what you're talking about today, you are able to just kind of share about it, right? And I've noticed that even with talks that I, like the first time I give a talk, I'm more locked to my notes. And then the second time I give it, it's a little bit more internalized. And then the third time, fourth time. And by the fifth, sixth, seventh time, I'm looking at people, and then what's funny now, I literally did this on Monday at my foundations course that I teach, is like, I've given this talk so many times now, this is the fifth, sixth time I've given this particular talk, where like, I glance down, I read like our mission statement, and I read that, and then from there on, for like 15, 20 minutes, I was just looking around and talking to people, and then I look back down at my notes just to like, one, to see what time it was, and two, like, what else do we have to talk about? And I was like, did that. Okay, we're going to close with this. And then put my notes down and did the last thing, you know? And it was like, it went so much better. And honestly, the talk was very different than it has been in the past, right? Yeah. Like, it was because I was speaking a little bit, like, I had internalized the message, so I didn't go in the exact order that my notes were in, my bullet points were in, but I covered everything, or I covered almost everything, but even after the talk, as I was, like, you know, driving home, thinking about how it went, it's like, I didn't say some things that I have typically said in these talks, but I said some new things that, you know, hopefully it was the Spirit working to what people needed to hear and not just me being forgetful. Like maybe some of it was one, maybe some of it was the other.
No, that's
right. But it felt good, right? It felt good leaving of like, this was different. It felt different. So.
Yeah. And people pick that up, right? I mean, I think that more than anything, you know, what we sometimes miss if we're stuck to a script or we're stuck to the notes in front of us and it's our job, they're missing a part of us. And part of what the power of preaching isn't just the actual words themselves, but it comes through a preacher and it comes through a person. And that's actually what can come alive, you know, when we do internalize the message. And you know, I just thought that was such a helpful shift. And I think for every speaker, that's a huge transition that we all kind of have to get over the hump, because it doesn't just come naturally day one. Because it certainly didn't for me. And I was really, really worried, both theologically and otherwise. I wanted to also stay on time. I always hated it how speakers would just blow through the clock.
Drives me insane.
Like, how hard is this? You know? And I knew I would have a tendency if I didn't kind of lock in. And so that was part of it, was just insurance. Yeah. So that was one huge thing I learned.
It's funny because I have a typical out when I've been in charge of events is that I'm also typically the musician. So if the speaker's going over, I typically go up and I start picking on the guitar and I'm like, it's over. You got to transition out and pray. We're moving into something else now, right? And I'm not going to name who it was, but probably one of the A-list of A-list speakers I've ever done an event with. I wasn't in charge of the event, but I was the musician. And so he went.
Dude,
five,
did you roll up?
Okay, oh, absolutely. He went. He went 5-8 minutes over, and I'm not in charge of the event, but I'm a Catholic leader, and I know what's good. And going over by many, many minutes isn't good. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I was trying to be respectful of this super A-list person, and I waited 5 to 8 extra minutes. About 6-7 minutes in, I get up. About 8 minutes into his overage, he had already talked for 45 minutes. He was going about to hit an hour, right? And we have like adoration. Like, you're not important to Jesus, my guy, you know? I was getting so mad. So I go up there. You know, starting worship mad is a whole other thing. But Ryan, that's I started true. Playing about 8 minutes in. He went for another 10 minutes.
Oh, dude. He was...
Not knowing you're over time or being prideful enough to go over time, which at the beginning, I thought he's just unaware and excited. That's fine.
Yeah.
About 8 minutes in, you're like, you're prideful. 10 minutes in, I'm like, you're terrible.
Oh my gosh.
You're cutting into Jesus' time. We're leaving at 8:30 no matter what happens. You just took adoration from 35 minutes to 15. It's your fault.
My gosh.
I was so mad, dude. So anyway, I didn't know that's what I was going to be talking about today. But it's funny because even this show at the beginning, like this podcast from 7, 8, 6 years ago, I used to have a ton of notes, and then you and I decided to do a full show together 3 minutes before that we started recording, and I was like, let's talk better preach, let's play a game, let's talk about foster care. That's what our notes look like today. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to For the Catholic. I'm still Taylor Stroll. That's still Ryan O'Hara, the host of the Better Preach podcast you can find wherever you listen to podcasts. And we're going to test his chops today. We talked a little bit about prepping talks and giving talks, and he's kind of become the master of it, whether he was before the show or not. He is now talking to all of the best people. So he knows a thing or two about preaching well. So we're going to put him to the test with our little game here. It's called Freestyle Preaching. So I'm sure you've seen freestyle rap videos, like, you know, on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube or whatever, where somebody's like, hey, give me 3 words. And then they put it into a rap. Well, you and I are very white and we're not going to be doing that. But we are relatively good at preaching. So we're going to freestyle preach. We're going to take turns giving each other 3 words that we have to fit into what we are trying to make a real sermon, whether it's for youth or college students or a parish mission or whatever. We're going to try to give you a real 60-second message, a real 60-second sermon with 3 random words that the other person gives us. Do you accept these terms?
I do. I think it sounds like a brilliant idea, and I can't wait to see how awful it could go.
Okay. Yeah. I think it will. Typically we play about 2 or 3 times each, and it goes very well once, it goes mediocre once, and it goes incredibly horrible another time. So we'll see if we live up to that. So
great.
Since this is your first time playing, I'm going to go first, meaning that you're going to give me three words and I'm going to try to fit them into a 60-second sermon. So, Ryan, give me three words and we'll see how
it goes. All right, I got you. How about studio referee weave?
Referee and weave. Okay. I've shared the story before, so it might be kind of cheating, but I've dealt with some anger issues in the past. Most recently, when I was a campus minister at a Catholic school, I went to one of their basketball games. One of our kids got assaulted, and no foul was called, so I got kicked out of the game by the referee. As while I am the campus minister, I got a standing ovation from this crew, which wasn't helpful in dealing with my anger issues. But you know, as I'm leaving, I'm having to weave through the crowd. I'm having to weave through these refs, and you know, I'm sitting in the parking lot. Like, do I wait for this referee to fight him? And I'm like, no, I'm just gonna go to the gym, and I'm gonna take, like, you know, sometimes when we have spiritual issues, we have to have spiritual ways to fix it and practical ways to fix it. The practical way that I fixed it was going to work out, lift heavy things, put them down. The spiritual way that I dealt with it was, you know, going through some prayer and through some conversations with some other holy people and how I could deal with my anger. And honestly, it's gotten a lot better, where I can sit here in this studio today and tell you that through prayer, through some practical things, and through the community of a bunch of other people, my anger issues have been toned down quite a bit. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
That was pretty good, dude.
Thank you.
That was pretty good, man. That was pretty good.
It's funny because typically when you give a talk, you at least kind of know where you're going to go. And in this, I just kind of start talking. I'm like, where's this going? And then we kind of find it halfway through.
Like any good extrovert, you know, yeah. You figure out what I'm going to say the same time I do. So I love that.
Right.
Fantastic. Way to go. Yeah, dude.
This is going to be your first.
Did you just set the bar really high, man? Okay, dude. Okay.
I think that's, yeah. I'd give myself like a 6 or 7. I think I started a little rocky, but I think I ended pretty well. Which, you know, we're loosening rocky. The muscles a little bit.
The referee really helped. That was a good, that was a good entry. You could kind of create the story around that. So that was nice. All right.
All right. I'm going to give you three words. I'm going to give you the words NFL. You're an NFL fan. I'm going to give you NFL, pineapple, and crucifix. On your mark, get set, go.
So I'm a huge, huge NFL fan. And I've been a Peyton Manning fan my whole life. And I think the thing that I admire about him was his ability to read the defense and make adjustments real time and to kind of see kind of what the defense was going to give him. And you really couldn't beat him at the line of scrimmage. He was really the first quarterback to be both quarterback and kind of an offensive coordinator on the field. And so where that came from, though, was his incredible preparation. And it was this sort of sweet contribution, kind of like the sweetness of a pineapple. Like I don't like pineapple on pizza, but, you know, pineapple is this sort of sweet. Do you? I don't know. I'm not down with that. But anyway, it's this sweet contribution he made to the NFL. And I think of Jesus and the way in which he knew what was coming, and he was willing to even call it out ahead of time. Even the people around him, they almost couldn't believe it, that he would predict his death. In fact, they wanted to get in the way of it, but they didn't trust his knowledge, his preparation, and his willingness to do whatever it took for others. In many ways, kind of like Peyton Manning.
All right. So, I have some thoughts. First thought being, it's pretty good for your first try. The second thought being, about a minute and a half into it, I was about to get my guitar out and start playing you out. You went a little long.
Dude, it was like 30 seconds from my perspective.
No, it was 3 minutes.
That's crazy.
But it's your first try. So starting with the NFL was good. Yeah. I think the use of NFL and the use of the crucifix was very good. I think you kind of shoehorned the pineapple in a little bit. So that's just some things that I don't want you to work on. But I'm going to help you out. I'm going to throw you a bone here. I don't think I explained the rules fully. You don't have to do them in the order that I give them to you. That might help. That might help with flow. So
no, that's fair.
Okay. All right.
I wasn't doing it. I was just glad I had NFL and crucifix, and I just made it up about the sweetness of the pineapple. What the heck?
We've all been there, man. We've all been there. Okay, so I think pretty good start with some room for improvement, and we'll see here in a couple of minutes. So I want you to go ahead and give me my next three words, and we'll see how this goes for me.
All right. Complain, revival, and fur.
Fur. Okay. All right. It's very interesting kind of conundrum with me is that this whole show is built on the joy of the gospel. Like my entire mission in life is to share the joy of the gospel. And yet people listen to this show, I think half for that and half to hear me complain, which is a weird combination, right? We want to hear the joy of the gospel, but also the complaining of the real life, right? Like I've had some real life crappy things happen to me recently where I've had a lot to complain about, but ultimately like, so when I come on here, I'm going to complain about it. But like ultimately in my life, it's like, I've been fine. Like I've been busy, but like I've had this peace about me because of my relationship with God. But I mean, to be honest though, I am ready for a revival. I'm ready for God to breathe new life into me. I'm ready for spring break again, you know, connecting back to my last message about some practicality and some spiritual thing. So time to slow down, some time to for God to kind of renew me there. And one of the things that I've been complaining about, I should have stuck this in earlier. One of the things I've been complaining about is that it's currently 85 degrees and I'm sweating. But last week I was out in the rain, 40 degrees, and it was wet and it was cold, and I just wanted to be wearing fur. But ultimately, this is falling apart. Ultimately, God is with me, and God's going to bring me joy even through the crappy parts. Amen. Okay, that wasn't my best.
Amen. Well, no, I mean, I think you did fur better than I did pineapple. Hey! I will give you that for sure.
Redemption. Very good. You saved. That was like, you know what that was? When a speaker isn't doing very well, and then the MC comes up and just fixes it. That's exactly what you just did for me, and I really, really appreciate that. All right. I left the door open for you. You can win round two here.
Man.
You can win round two here. So, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm sitting here looking at you on video, and the whole time that I've been looking at you, there's something sitting right behind you. It's like some cube or something. What is that behind you?
That is like a 3D illusion cube thing.
3D cube. Okay, that's going to be one of your words.
Nice.
I'm being Brick Tamblyn, and I'm just picking things out of that I can see and say. So I'm going to say 3D cube, plants, because there's a plant sitting right on top of that 3D cube, and right above that is lights. So I'm literally Brick Tamblyn-ing. I don't know if that's a word. This, your three words, sir, are 3D cube, plants, and lights.
So in the parable of the soils, the four soils, Jesus wants us to be good soil. You can get planted in the rocks. You can get planted on the path. You can get planted in the thorns. But he's saying we want to be planted in good soil. And where are our hearts? And really, for a plant to grow, it needs light. It needs the light of the sun in addition to the soil. And so that's really where I see us kind of spiritually, is that it's not just about the soil of our hearts, but it's about a readiness to always be in the light of the sun in prayer, in the sacraments, in confession. And somewhere in there, there's a connection with a 3D cube, but it's really hard to say what it is. It's quite mysterious, like the spiritual life. I have no idea how to make that a part of what we're saying. So we're just going to say it like that.
You know what's great? You hit a minute. You're on time.
So no, I was working on that. Working on that
problem. Your first two, the 3D cube, even as you were going, I'm like, if he lands this, it's going to be the best one that has happened so far. Not just today, but the best one that we do. Because honestly, Ryan, like the first 45 seconds sounded like a real talk that you would actually give, which is like all of this, right?
Yeah.
The way that that's you right. connected the soil and the plants and the light, it was beautiful. And I was like, if he can land this plane, it'll be 100 out of 100. I'm still going to give you an 85. You win this round. You were better than mine. Mine fell apart as well. You win this round. So currently, we are at 1-1 going into our final round of this
game.
There
we go.
So We're 1-1. This is going to be our last one. I want to give you, or you're going to give me my final three words, please.
Again, these aren't easy. So I'm throwing you some.
You're learning some gamesmanship. Yeah, you know that if yes. you give me hard words, you might win.
That's true. Monkey.
Okay.
Deviate. And quality.
I'm going to share my testimony. I shared a little bit about it when I was on the podcast with you, but when I was a kid, I was so bored in church. I was just like a monkey jumping around everywhere, ooh-ah-ah-ing and making noise and not really caring, not really wanting to change, right? Not really wanting to deviate from the path that I was on. I was very happy, or at least I thought I was very happy where I was going. But then I really met Jesus. I met Jesus through the scriptures. I met Jesus in the Eucharist. I met Jesus in the community of the church. And I did. I wanted to change. I realized that the happiness that I thought I have of just being kind of a doofus and a jerk, like that wasn't true fulfillment, right? Like I might've been happy and smiling for a minute, but I would leave church and I wasn't really truly fulfilled. And I didn't have this deep seated joy that I really wanted in my life and that God really wanted in my life. And I realized that there might be some fun outside of the Lord, but true quality, true good living, true, the happiness that we are created for is only found through life with Christ. So I decided to do that, and I haven't been monkey around ever since. I've just really been trying to point myself to the Lord. There's been hard days, there's been some hard times, but ultimately there's a joy and a peace that comes from walking with the Lord, and that's what I want for you today.
Dude.
I think that was pretty good. I think I set the bar pretty high here.
I think you freaking killed it. Monkey, deviate, quality. I mean, that was solid. And you had it right away. Like you got monkey and deviate within the first 15 seconds. I'm like, oh, okay, there's an easy quality right out there. So nice job, dude.
Yeah. And then it's like, I can get into real preaching because I'm not worried about how to fit 3D cube or fur into a thing. So, all right.
Well done. All right. Let me get my notes here. All right.
I'm going to give you the final three words. I think I set the bar pretty high, and I will tell you, nobody's ever beaten me on their first try. We've had some of my co-hosts have played this game with me. They've won later on. Nobody's ever beaten me on the first try. I think you're in an uphill battle, but we'll see how this goes. So I'm going to give you computer, confession, and I'll be nice, mercy. Computer, confession, and mercy. Any order you want. On your mark, get set, go.
You know, I think there's this tragedy that we don't really believe that we're lovable. We don't really believe that God not only made us, but he loves us. And we don't believe that he's actually merciful. And the truth is, mercy is getting what we don't deserve. And while we may not believe, it's true that we may not deserve it, it is true that he loves us and he's merciful. And we can know that we can know that we can know that God has forgiven us and that he is merciful if we would be willing to humble ourselves and go to confession. It's so powerful to be able to hear those words that, you know, I don't know about you, but I like write down, you know, my sins. I actually write them down on my little computer in my pocket, my phone. And I write them down and I go into confession and I try to share them sincerely and honestly. And then when I hear those words of absolution, as I do my penance, I literally delete word for word. And it's just powerful watching the words go away, just like my sins go away. He takes them as far away from me as east is from the west. And that's the grace and goodness of God in confession.
I have my answer and it's locked in. How do you think it went?
It was pretty good. I finally got all three.
You got all three. And I have never, in the history of this game, while somebody else is playing, I have never been like, yeah. Amen, brother. I think you win. I think you won. You won on the first try.
Yes. Yes.
And this is such a redemption arc because that might be the best single round from a guest we've ever had after what I think was probably the worst single round from a guest we've ever had in the first attempt. So
the pineapple.
Yeah. The pineapple. So just for the redemption arc and for how much you've grown here in the last 15 minutes,
thank Ryan, you.
I'm giving you the win. Congratulations. You've won freestyle preaching.
That is amazing. I'm honored, and that was not easy to do, Taylor. You made it. You set the bar really high. Actually, the first time you did it, I'm like, what is this guy? This is amazing. I've never seen anything like it. So that's fantastic, man. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
No, you did really well. What I want you to do is on your CV or on your website, I want you to put 2024 Freestyle Preaching Champion and don't explain it. If people ask questions, like, it happened, you know?
I will. I totally put it on my CV. It's like significant accomplishments. Yeah. There's a section. Yeah, 2024
wow,
Freestyle
Preaching Champion. I've never even heard of this. He won this.
They Google it, you know? Yeah, it must be online somewhere.
It was funny because I was like, this is like sounding like a like some of my best material on confession. And you just made it up on the spot. So very, very good. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and have one final conversation, something near and dear to your heart that I'm going to learn about. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our final conversation here on today's show. I'm still with Ryan O'Hara. And you mentioned something when I was like, hey, what do you want to talk about today? You mentioned there's a whole part of your life that, like, I know you for your professional work, but there's a big part of your personal life that I don't know about. You want to talk a little bit about foster care and adoption? And I want to let you just kind of set the table for us because I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. Well, where it starts for us was our wedding day. My wife and I, we were married on November 28th, 1998. So we just celebrated 25 years. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Back in November. Yeah, thanks. And, you know, every married couple makes three promises or kind of three affirmations at their wedding. First is, did you come here freely? Yes, I hope so. Will you be faithful, you know, kind of till death do you part? And then the third one is, will you accept children lovingly from God and then raise them up in what the church teaches? And so, you know, all of us answer those questions, and those aren't maybe difficult questions to answer. And we didn't think a whole lot of it, my wife and I, on our wedding day. But a couple of years in, about a year and a half in, it became pretty clear that we weren't going to be able to have kids of our own. And, you know, infertility kind of is this sort of looming, this diagnosis that kind of hit us and kind of hit us like a ton of bricks. And why I bring up our wedding day is one of the real turning points in that was, you know, we reflected on, hey, we promised, you know, on our wedding day, not that we would have kids naturally and, you know, whatever. It's just that we would accept children lovingly from God. And we said, I don't think that precludes adoption. And I think that even means we ought to be open to adoption. And again, the cross of infertility kind of hits people, everybody differently. But that was kind of the way that it arrived in our laps was really kind of not like a door that was closed, but actually a doorway that was opening to something particular that God was inviting us into. And so we kind of began a process of like, okay, adoption. Well, there's a lot of different ways that people do that. One is, you know, like private adoption. You know, they sign up for like a home study and, you know, they get connected up with birth moms out there who are looking to, you know, give their child up for adoption. But that was really expensive. And we were Catholic missionaries at the time. It's like, oh, I don't think we can do that. Same thing like with international adoption. When we were doing missionary work, we'd be in Mexico or Ireland or Canada or wherever we would go around, and we would visit different orphanages and things. And I remember we were in Mexico this one day. This is after we had kind of understood our diagnosis with infertility and kind of thinking about international adoption. And if my wife had a big enough coat, I mean, she would have literally smuggled a few right, of the, yeah. We would have been in danger with the Mexican government, but she was kind of ready to go. Like, well, that's not going to happen. And the same thing with international adoption, super expensive. But the one place where it wasn't expensive and there wasn't a long line to kind of that people were lining up to do it, which was foster care. Mm. And foster care is a situation where county or the state has to intervene in a family where, you know, children, there's abuse or neglect. And, you know, the state county kind of steps in, pulls them out of that home temporarily. And that's the key idea. Children who are in foster care are meant to be so temporarily, either that the goal is to reunify them with birth family or another permanent family that's suitable. And in our case, we said, well, let's do that. We kind of threw our hands up for that. And so in 2005, we were licensed as foster parents. And from 2005 to 2008, we had 13 kids come through our home. Wow. And four of them stuck around forever. We adopted four sons. Wow, they're now 17, 18, 19, and 22.
Wow.
And it's been a wild, wild journey, mostly from the perspective of, you know, you can't, we tried to parent them basically like we were parented, but we didn't have a trauma background. We didn't have the brokenness and the pain that they carried into to life just because of the disruption of family life early on for all of them. And so then that just totally shifted the game. And that's what's been just such a fascinating journey to be on, is to kind of shift how we are as parents to really serve, kind of like speaking, you know, like knowing your audience. And again, every child's different, but these were a particular kind of different that we didn't have any access to. And it took us a long time, actually made a lot of mistakes, to really learn kind of how to better parent them. So that's kind of the general arc, sure, of the whole journey, and a little bit about what foster care is about and why we felt called. If, you know, there's like a huge need. There was like 4,000 kids in foster care in Maricopa County in Phoenix.
Wow.
And nowhere near as many families to take care of them. And so we were getting calls all the time. So, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, thanks for laying that out for me. A lot of connections here. I have a lot of questions, and then
cool
story connection that I'll probably share later on. But
sure,
just some context for like a lot of this is new for me, but both just for me in general, but also new for the show.
Yeah.
One thing that's not new is adoption, because Allison Sullivan, one of our co-hosts, has adopted a child, and we have talked about that on the show.
Yeah.
Some of the things that are new for me are the infertility piece and something that you said about that really stuck out to me. I want to ask you about, but then also the foster care piece. So the thing that's different is that Allison and her husband have their own biological kids.
Yeah.
And then after having their biological kids, adopted a baby from China, special needs baby from China.
Beautiful.
So some similar things there, but I'd say that mostly for you, just for context. But the thing that you said about I have known people, good Catholic people, who have struggled with infertility and ended up being, you know, married for many years and didn't have kids. And I know that it was a burden for them. I know that it was difficult. It's not something that I've experienced, but it's something that I know was very, very hard for them. But one thing that you said completely flipped my mind on it, because I think there was a lot of hurt for them in regards to the promises that they made at their wedding. Where I think whether it was true in their mind, but I know it was what I thought of their experience was, because they would share how hard it was. You know, I became a teenager, and these people are close with me. They'd share about it, you know,
sure,
because they were like helping parent me. They became like an aunt and uncle. You know, whatever. It was good for me, good for them.
Yeah.
But I don't think the connection was ever made for me until literally you just said it at the beginning of you sharing, was it. That it, the promise isn't that you will have your own, that you will have your own biological kids. The promise is that you will be openly, lovingly open your home to, and your family to kids. I've never made that connection. I'm 34 years old, and I've been, you know, living in the Catholic world forever, and I've experienced people who have experienced this. And I think even they felt some sadness or hurt around, oh, we're not fulfilling this. But you saying that, you and your wife open your heart to, let's bring kids in openly and lovingly.
Yeah.
I've just never heard that connection. So I'm sure it was hard and difficult, but how long did it take y'all to, I'm sure there was some sadness and some mourning. Mm-hmm. How long did it take y'all to make that shift into, okay, then let's try this other way?
It took us about 3 years.
Okay.
But part of what maybe delayed it, if that sounds like a delay, I don't know, but it took us that long in part because we were going on mission together. We had a sense of, like, again, there's by their fruit, you shall know them. And, you know, like, our lives ought to bear fruit. We really wanted our marriage to bear fruit. And I think one of the only way, a primary way that I think a lot of Catholics think about that is just more kids, more fruit, you know, like that's be fruitful and multiply. You know, literally the scriptures tell us that. But we had a more expansive view of the word fruitfulness in our life. And we first felt like there was this great fruitfulness. The Lord was calling us to be missionaries as a couple. And so that actually felt like God's providence, because we could do a lot of these things. We could make, you know, no money and go all over the world and not be in debt and blah, 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 in part because we didn't have kids. So it actually opened up a doorway to mission that a lot of young Catholic families who have 2 and 3 kids in the first 3 or 4 years, they probably just can't, you know? And so there was, right from the start, we saw this like doorway to mission open up. But then also, it's just once we were there, just as we just kept praying, it really, I still remember the conversation that my wife and I had where our wedding vows hit us like that. Mm. We go, you know what? This doesn't in any way preclude openness to adoption. This, you know, it just like, it was like ding, 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 you know, just sort of the light bulb went off. And with that, it was like, oh my gosh. In fact, Lord, I think this is what you not only are inviting us into, I think you really want us to do this. And it's for the sake of others. And isn't that what our married life is all about? And so that was, again, just a beautiful little revelation in prayer and in understanding that. But it had, I think, a lot to do with the context that our life was on a kind of trajectory of mission, which helped us to see fruitfulness in a bigger way anyway. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we were just kind of ripe for that insight.
No, that's beautiful. And like, honestly, it's like shifting how I think about people who are struggling with infertility and adoption and foster care and all this stuff. Like, yeah. This is just, it's kind of opened up some new things for me.
Sweet.
So I'll share the story now. It's fascinating because one of my favorite memories as a child, and maybe I've shared this before years ago on the show in connection with Allison, because there's some similarities there and some similarities here, but I haven't talked about it much or in a long time. So one of my favorite memories as a child, I'm like, you know, getting a little teary-eyed. It's like one of my best friends is from China, and I didn't know the story for a while, but she's beautiful, brilliant. She ended up being either a valedictorian, salutatorian. You know, like she was brilliant, incredibly talented, drop-dead gorgeous, and we became really good friends, right? And I didn't know that she was adopted I didn't know that she was in foster care for a long time.
Oh, wow.
So I, you know, yeah. I'm in like 5th or 6th grade. You know, this is probably the first time I've ever had an experience with this, at least knowingly, right? Where I met her foster parents, and like being a 5th or 6th grader, I don't know what's going on. It's like, she's clearly Asian and they're clearly old, very old. Like they were like grandparents age at the time.
Yeah.
And clearly both very white. So I had some questions, right? So I'd ask the questions, you know, probably didn't handle it with grace because I was in 5th or 6th grade, you know, but, you know, she's like, well, I'm in foster care. And she was one of the babies that, you know, especially in China, girls aren't wanted as much, especially back then, right? Where there's limits on all that stuff. So she wasn't desired. So this family, good Christian family, I think they were Presbyterian, foster cared her for a long time, along with a bunch of other kids. And something that you said that was, you know, y'all fostered for a while and then you ended up adopting 4. Well, they aged out of getting new kids to foster. You know, they got to the age where they're like, we're not going to give y'all any new kids to foster.
Oh, the parents did.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Apparently there's a max age or whatever, and they had hit it. Yeah. So they could keep the kids that they currently had in foster care, but they weren't going to give them any new kids.
Yeah.
So I don't know the numbers. You know, again, I was young, but I don't know all the numbers. But essentially everybody was gone except for my friend. And she was the last one. So like one of the most special memories I have of 5th and 6th grade was in 6th grade. The parents came up and they adopted her that morning and the whole school. So 1,000 of us got to celebrate her adoption. You know, a school essentially stopped. I got goosebumps, tearing up, man. Like, it's just so special that like one of my friends was chosen and loved after not experiencing that for a plethora of reasons, and then experienced that here with them through foster care. And then now like they're her parents, right? And like I got to, we were friends in 5th and 6th grade, 7th and 8th grade, all the way through high school. We hung out together in college. We went to different universities. We would hang out together. And like her parents are some of my favorite people, like just a beautiful story. And that was really my first connection to this. So you mentioned that you said y'all had 17 that y'all fostered at some point. Was that
13?
13. And then 13, you adopted 4.
Yeah.
So I want to know two things. What was it like when you first started? Like, how did it get started? And then yeah. after that, what was the experience of adopting? I'm guessing it's a similar thing, like towards the end of fostering. So yeah, explain
yeah,
that
just
a bit.
To say, maybe just to even answer that first, it depends on the place, but most places, once a child's placed in foster care, usually by 18 months, they're trying to figure out permanency. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the goal. And so sometimes I think they're working too fast because parents, it takes time to kind of get life back on track. And I think can kind of hold this like punishment of taking their kids away from them. And that can be this major stress inducer. So I have a lot of thoughts about that on the other side. But for us, you know, we were anxious to kind of move things forward as much as we could. We wanted permanency for these kids too, but we didn't want it any faster than it should have been. Because again, a parent's rights are sacred. And so for us, we were kind of open. All we knew was we wanted kids that were younger than our marriage. That was sort of our principle. Yeah. You know, we'd been married, 7-8 years. And so we were looking kind of for kids 6 and under. And so we just opened the floodgates and they came. And so my favorite story was we had three boys in foster care. And my wife said, "Hey, what about a fourth?" And this is all in a span of about 18 months. I'm like, "Oh." And so we had changed more diapers than you can shake a stick at. We had all these infants and newborns, and it was wild. And she's like, "Let's go for four." I'm like, "How about we just stick with three?" But anyway, so we went to Olive Garden and ate as many breadsticks and salad as we could and just had a great time. And we're going to pray about it, right? We're going to take a week. That was what we decided. We're going to pray about it. And I was open, and my wife certainly was open. But middle of the week, Wednesday comes along. I come home from work, and I walk by the living room, and there's this car seat of someone I don't recognize. And I just walked by and it registered, and I came back, and my wife's like, "I'm so sorry. I tried to call, but you didn't pick up." She's like, "I just couldn't say no."
Right.
And so, you know, an emergency placement happened, and that's my youngest son, Adam.
I was 17. Gonna ask. I was assuming it was one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a special deal. He was 3 days old. It came from the hospital. So everything from a 3-day-old to a 4-year-old, you know, and then a couple in between are our four boys who came into our home. And, you know, as I mentioned just earlier, I think that the biggest challenge is dealing with parenting kids who have experienced trauma. And it's relative. Not every trauma is the same, but the principles are very different. And consequences, for instance, don't really work as naturally. I remember we would try to get really specific with one of our sons. Like if you had your consequence would be like a 10-minute chore. Like that was a thing that we thought was a good idea. But then he would get 3 10-minute consequences. And then we'd keep adding them up because then he got 5 more. And then we literally got to 187 10-minute consequences. And we're like,
"You work for me now."
This isn't working. We can't keep track of all. We don't know what, you know. And so we had to even move beyond consequences in some ways. And so that was just a wild experience to, like, the way that you and I might have received correction from our parents computed in a way that made sense. But for them, that discipline, that correction, that trust of authority, it's not there.
Yeah.
Not there. And it took a lifetime, and still is something we're working on, you know, with the boys too, you know, after all these years.
That's funny. That makes me think of literally something that I'm dealing with now when it comes to coaching, because I'm coaching, you know, kids that aren't mine, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of them where it's like they mess up and they get this consequence. And there's other ones where if they mess up and I tell them the consequence, they're like, "No." And I'm like, "Well, we're going to talk about this," but it's like, I have to find other ways to communicate with them and other ways to get them to do the things that I need them to do without making it unfair to everybody else. So it's very funny that you bring that up, because I'm like, me and like the rest of the coaching staff, we're like, I don't know, man.
No, that's a great example. And it's both of those things. You need them to kind of learn the lesson, but it also has to be fair within the context of the team. And sometimes that's just a really narrow path. It's hard to find.
Right.
And yeah, you got your work cut out for you on that one.
Yeah, you too. I also laughed that your youngest was a surprise. My youngest was also a surprise. Yeah. Different ordeals, but similar experiences there.
Yeah. But that's the same thing. Like, there's all these beautiful similarities if people would sort of look at it. And I see infertility as an invitation to a different kind of fruitfulness. Yeah. And that's really how we've looked at it. And that's been a great blessing and a great grace.
I think that's really mature. I think that's really insightful. That's the primary thing I'm taking away from our entire conversation. So we mentioned earlier, you're the host of the Better Preach podcast. You've also got some other stuff going on. Why don't you tell us about that and how we can get connected with you?
Yeah. RyanOhara.org is my website, and there's videos and podcasts and articles and things on there. People wanted to check some of those things out, but I also do some speaking around the country, parish missions and retreats and that sort of thing. A lot of the kind of stuff you do, Taylor, and that's on my website there on my speaking page. I would love to connect with folks.
Yeah, this is great. I really enjoyed talking with you both on your show and here today. You mentioned that'll go out sometime soon. So y'all go subscribe to the Better Preach podcast. You'll see whenever my episode releases, but thanks for talking with me today. We ran the gamut. We kind of looked inward to me on your show and looked outward to you on mine. So this is great. So thank y'all for listening. Thank you for being here. I'll be back next week. See ya. Thank you for watching and listening today. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you do, please hit subscribe wherever you are watching or listening so that you don't miss us when we are back next week. Hope you all had a blessed Easter and are still living in the joy of the resurrection. See you soon. Love you.